Israelis and Palestinians are perceived by themselves and by external actors as different racial groups. Second, Israel's deployment of a combination of measures across the Palestinian territory and against the Palestinian people falls within Article 2 of the Apartheid Convention. Israel has long-standing discriminatory laws, policies, and practices that affect only Palestinians and are designed to benefit exclusively and maintain the dominance of Israeli Jews on both sides of the Green Line. Moreover, many measures are designed to fragment the Palestinian people as a group and to separate Palestinians from Israeli Jews. This is what Namibia rightly calls strategic fragmentation. Such measures have been set out in Belize's written statement. Here, I emphasize two points. First, in the West Bank, there is the separation wall, restrictive permit requirements, checkpoints, and segregated roads. This creates what the Israeli army officially calls sterilization, areas and roads closed to Palestinians. Hebronization, meaning the strategies of repression and segregation, is spreading. Second, Gaza is under siege and blockade. Millions of Palestinians are confined to ever smaller strips of land, the longest and most complete siege of the greatest number in modern history. The whole of Gaza has become an impoverished, desperate ghetto. Since 1967, Israel has detained 1 million Palestinians, including tens of thousands of children. Israel's conduct against the Palestinian people has been characterized as apartheid by UN special procedures since 2007, including a joint statement of 47 mandate holders in 2020. Turning to the third element of apartheid, intent. Israel's measures are imposed for the purpose of establishing and maintaining dominance and systematic oppression. This can be inferred from their scale and institutionalized nature, and from the differing effects they have on the Palestinian and Israeli peoples as regards access to basic services and rights protection. It is also directly evidenced by Israeli laws that affirm Jewish supremacy as a national value. Intent is heard in the hate speech of Israeli public officials and political and religious leaders. The court has ordered Israel to take all measures within its power to prevent and punish the direct and public incitement to commit genocide in relation to members of the Palestinian group in Gaza. Intent is also evidenced by Israel's suppression of dissent against the system of apartheid. Indoctrination starts in the classroom. The CERD committee has expressed concern at the tide of racist hate speech in school curricula and textbooks. The Committee on the Rights of the Child has pointed to the extensive militarization of the educational system, which is entrenched during compulsory military service. Israel's state controller has criticized the government for doing very little to purge the severe phenomena of racism and hatred among youth and to promote a shared society. If the requisite intent is established, any claimed security rationale cannot displace the conclusion that Israel's conduct falls within Article 2. In the light of these violations of self-determination and the prohibition of apartheid, Belize requests the court to formulate precisely what Israel and third states must do. Specific consequences facilitate accountability. Belize refers to the written pleadings that detail such consequences. The core consequence of the violation of the Jus Cogens right to self-determination and the prohibition of apartheid is immediate cessation. Israel must dismantle the physical, legal, and policy regime of discrimination and oppression, including freeing political prisoners. Evacuate Israeli settlers from Palestinian territories, permit Palestinians to return to their country and property, and lift the siege and blockade of Gaza. These consequences, taken collectively, mean that Israel must immediately, unconditionally, and totally withdraw from the entire Palestinian territory. This legal consequence applies irrespective of the outcome of the court's consideration of occupation and annexation. Israel must also make full reparation for the damage suffered as a result of its violations.
Assad Shoman is special envoy of the Belizean Prime Minister on sovereignty issues. Philippa Webb is professor of international public law at King's College London and a member of the bars of Belize, New York State, England, and Wales. We are listening to a few of the oral pleadings delivered to the International Court of Justice this past week in The Hague, likely leading to an advisory opinion from the court by the end of this year. Here's one of the session's most cogent presentations. From Ireland, Rossa Fanning is Ireland's Attorney General.
Mr. President, Israel has been in occupation of the Palestinian territory since 1967. Accordingly, in that territory, it is obliged to respect applicable international humanitarian law, including the law of military occupation and international human rights law. The defining feature of Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, has been continuous settlement activity. In our written statement, we have drawn on the authoritative reports of the Secretary General and the High Commissioner for Human Rights to set out the numerous different ways in which this has occurred. But in summary, we say the following. Israel has used different means to take and exercise control for non-military purposes over as much land in the OPT as possible. Once in control, Israel has undertaken permanent construction on this land, in particular developing or encouraging the development of permanent settlements, onto which it has incentivized large numbers of its own citizens to transfer. Through its actions, Israel has fundamentally altered the demographics of the West Bank. As of 2022, almost 700,000 Israeli citizens were living in settlements in the West Bank, including in East Jerusalem. Israel has extended the application of domestic Israeli law to those living in settlements, blurring the distinction between Israel and the OPT. And Israel has transferred the exercise of authority in the OPT in certain areas from military command to civilian control, integrating administration of the territory into that of Israel. By transferring parts of its own civilian population into the OPT, Israel has violated Article 49(6) of the Fourth Geneva Convention. It has continued to do this, notwithstanding the court's confirmation of its unlawfulness in the Wall case, and despite being exhorted by both the Security Council and the General Assembly to cease this practice. Israel has also continued to unlawfully destroy and appropriate property throughout the OPT as part of its policy of encouraging and facilitating the expansion of settlements. This destruction and appropriation of property cannot reasonably be justified by military necessity. Rather, it is clear that it has been done to facilitate and indeed encourage the expansion of settlements. Such destruction and appropriation of property clearly breaches the Fourth Geneva Convention and the laws and customs of war codified by the 1907 Hague Regulations. There has also been a recent marked increase in reports of Palestinian civilians being subjected to sustained serious violence by Israeli settlers, with little or no protection from the Israeli security forces, contrary to international humanitarian law. The security forces have been reported and recorded not only watching this violence without intervening, but in some instances even participating in it themselves. This has escalated since the 7th of October, and the Secretary General has warned that tensions have now reached boiling point. The Secretary General and High Commissioner have expressed concern that this violence, particularly when considered in light of the appropriation and destruction of Palestinian property, has compelled Palestinians to leave their homes, their farms, and their grazing grounds. The Secretary General has noted that the coercive environment created by Israel could amount to forcible transfer, a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which may amount to a war crime. Let me now turn to the question of annexation. The evident permanence of the settlements can only be explained in Ireland's assessment by Israel's intention of annexing the land upon which they are built. In our view, the development and expansion of settlements clearly demonstrate that Israel is and has been engaged in a process of annexation of that land for decades. The absence of any declaration of annexation or formal de jure act of incorporation over most of the West Bank is immaterial. Despite references in the current Israeli government's coalition agreements, which the Secretary General describes as promoting a policy of application of sovereignty over the West Bank, previous history suggests that no announcement or formal act of incorporation may occur in the near future. Nevertheless, in Ireland's view, Israel is already engaged in the process of annexing Palestinian territory. It is doing so de facto through its policy of encouraging demographic change in that territory by population transfer and by the continuous development and maintenance of permanent settlements and infrastructure. Ireland is concerned that it may also be doing so de jure by increasingly extending the application of domestic Israeli law and civilian administration to the settlements in the OPT, thereby integrating them into its own territory and erasing the differences in law between Israel and the settlements. But whether de facto, de jure, or both, this process of annexation is in clear breach of the prohibition in international law against the acquisition of territory by threat or use of force, a fundamental principle of international law. To assert that this is not the case simply because Israel has not formally declared annexation would render the prohibition devoid of all meaning. That would permit states to acquire territory by force without legal consequence simply by declining to adopt a formal act of annexation or incorporation. International humanitarian law does not classify a military occupation as either lawful or unlawful per se. Rather, it recognizes that military occupation may occur during the course of an armed conflict, and it sets down rules to regulate the conduct of the occupying power, in particular its armed forces. Military occupation is necessarily temporary, insofar as international law prohibits the acquisition of territory by force. Occupation does not confer sovereignty. Rather, it is a temporary exception to sovereignty, and accordingly, it cannot be of indefinite duration. Prolonged occupation over an extended period of time, therefore, unavoidably raises legal questions, in particular, whether it constitutes a disguised form of annexation and/or a determined effort to deny the people of an occupied territory the exercise of their right to self-determination. In either case, the legality of the occupying power's presence in the territory inevitably arises. While it is, of course, possible that a military occupation effected by force may be undertaken in exercise of the right in international law to the use of force in self-defence, any such occupation may involve no more and may endure no longer than is necessary and proportionate to the armed attack to which it is a response. In the case of the OPT, Israel's military occupation commenced in 1967 and has continued now uninterrupted for some 57 years. It has also entailed, as I have said, extensive and continuous, permanent and deliberate settlement building. Neither the duration of the occupation nor the scale and extent of settlement activity is, in Ireland's view, justified or permitted by the law regulating the use of force in self-defence. Indeed, if the security of one people can only be achieved by the occupation over so many decades of the territory of another people, one has to wonder whether there can be any military solution to the problem that it purports to address. In our view, the only effective solution to the problem can be a political one. Mr. President, I wish to turn now to the question of self-determination. As submitted in our written statement, Ireland has concluded that by its prolonged occupation of Palestinian lands and continuous settlement activity on those lands, Israel has prevented the exercise by the Palestinian people of their right to self-determination. The principle of self-determination is a fundamental principle of international law enshrined in the Charter of the United Nations and the 1966 International Covenants on Civil and Political Rights and on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. The content of that principle was elaborated in the 1970 Declaration on Friendly Relations, adopted by consensus at the General Assembly. That declaration makes clear that every state has the duty to promote, through joint and separate action, realisation of the principle of equal rights and self-determination of peoples, bearing in mind that subjection of peoples to alien subjugation, domination and exploitation constitutes a violation of that principle, as well as a denial of fundamental human rights, and is contrary to the Charter. The Declaration solemnly proclaims that every state has the duty to refrain from any forcible action which deprives peoples, in the elaboration of the present principle, of their right to self-determination and freedom and independence. In the Wall case, the Court found that the construction of the Wall and its associated regime severely impeded the exercise by the Palestinian people of their right to self-determination. It therefore breached Israel's obligation to respect that right. In Ireland's view, the combination of Israel's prolonged occupation of the OPT and its escalating settlement activity has done so on a far greater scale. That escalating activity has increasingly fragmented Palestinian presence upon and restricted Palestinian use of the land and the natural resources of the Palestinian people. It threatens the viability of a future Palestinian state. The nature, scale, and duration of settlement activity is such that its purpose can only be to permanently obstruct the exercise of the Palestinian people's right to self-determination. Both the prohibition of acquisition of territory by threat or use of force and the principle of self-determination are fundamental principles of international law, as are the basic rules of international humanitarian law. It is widely recognised that these fundamental principles have the character of peremptory norms of general international law, or jus cogens, from which derogation is never permitted, or, as the Court described them in its advisory opinion on the threat or use of nuclear weapons, intransgressible principles of international customary law. In turn, peremptory norms of general international law give right to obligations owed to the international community as a whole, obligations erga omnes, in relation to which all states have a legal interest, a conclusion also recently reached by the International Law Commission. Ireland has, with regret, concluded that by its prolonged occupation of Palestinian territory and the settlement activities it has conducted there for more than half a century, Israel has committed serious breaches of a number of peremptory norms of general international law and the corresponding erga omnes obligations to which they give rise, namely the basic rules of international humanitarian law, the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people, and the prohibition of acquisition of territory by force. Under the customary international law of state responsibility, where a state breaches an international obligation, it commits an internationally wrongful act. Unless its wrongfulness is otherwise precluded, that act entails the international responsibility of the state concerned, and it involves legal consequences. Where the act amounts to a serious breach of both a peremptory norm and a corresponding obligation erga omnes, this Court has concluded that it involves legal consequences for all states, namely, first, the obligation not to recognise the illegal situation resulting from the serious breach. Second, the obligation not to render aid or assistance in maintaining the situation created by the serious breach. Third, the obligation to cooperate to bring the serious breach to an end, or as the Court put it, in the specific circumstances of the Wall case, to see to it that any impediment resulting from the construction of the wall to the exercise by the Palestinian people of their right to self-determination is brought to an end. In the Wall case, the Court found that Israel was obliged to end the breaches of its legal obligations, including those under international humanitarian law, and its duty to respect the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination and to make reparation for the damage caused by those breaches. In the present case, the law of state responsibility likewise obliges Israel to bring to an end the serious breaches that I have outlined to the Court, including by the reversing of its settlement activity and the making of reparation for the damage arising by way of restitution and compensation as appropriate. For all states, as members of the international community as a whole, to which the relevant obligations erga omnes are owed, the legal consequences of these serious breaches are, in Ireland's view, straightforward. All states are obliged to cooperate to bring these breaches to an end through lawful means, not to recognise as lawful the situation created by them, and not to render aid or assistance in maintaining that situation. In particular, states are obliged to cooperate to bring to an end Israel's serious breach of its obligation to respect the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination, or, as the Court found in the Wall case, to see to it that any impediment to the exercise of that right is brought to an end. This includes cooperation by states through the United Nations and, as appropriate, other international organisations, including the European Union. As regards the obligation not to recognise as lawful the situation created by these serious breaches, the Court has provided an example of how this may be achieved in its advisory opinion on the legal consequences for states of the continued presence of South Africa in Namibia. There, the Court found that the duty of non-recognition obliged states, inter alia, to abstain from entering into economic and other forms of relationship or dealings with South Africa, which may entrench its authority over this territory of Namibia. This was also the approach taken by the EU in the case of the annexation by the Russian Federation of Crimea in 2014, when it implemented a broad range of diplomatic, economic, and other measures intended to preclude any implied recognition of the annexation. Those measures included a ban on imports of goods originating in the annexed territory and a prohibition against investing in it. In the present case, we say that states are obliged not to render aid or assistance in maintaining the situation created by Israel's breach of its obligation to respect the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. The General Assembly and Security Council have, in the past, called upon all states to refrain from rendering any assistance to the maintenance of situations of denial of self-determination. In Ireland's view, these obligations require all states, as well as international organisations with external trade competence, in the case of Ireland, the European Union, to review their trading relationships with the settlements in the OPT. It requires them to take steps to prevent trade that assists in the maintenance of the situation created by the settlement activity, or that implicitly recognises or serves to entrench or legitimise Israel's settlement or annexation of that territory. Mr. President, members of the Court, Ireland remains committed to the realisation of the two-state solution endorsed by the Security Council, a safe and secure Israel and an independent, democratic, contiguous, viable and sovereign Palestinian state, living side by side in peace, within secure and recognised borders based on those of 1967, with Jerusalem as the capital of both states. This is the established framework within which it was agreed that the solution would be found, which is why recent statements by Israel's Prime Minister, in which he openly rejected the two-state solution, have caused such widespread international dismay. The solution must be built on a foundation of respect for international law, but especially respect for the right to self-determination. In the circumstances, Ireland encourages this Court to provide its authoritative clarification of these essential legal issues to the General Assembly as requested. May it please the Court.
Rossa Fanning is the Attorney General of Ireland. Read more about this past week's advisory opinion hearings in The Hague about Israel's clearly permanent occupation and de facto annexation of Palestine at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, please help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, the guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your brilliant instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.